Okay, by way of review, a few weeks ago, we discussed that the modern church is swimming in a sea of doctrinal anarchy and has to a large degree lost its identity. And this stems from churches not taking seriously the role of teaching and learning. The New Testament is clear on the church's role in sustaining Christian maturity through the protection of the Orthodox doctrinal tradition. And that role of teacher in the New Testament is uniquely tied with the church leader and authority. Church's main job is to stay pure to Christ and his word. The church needs to prioritize teaching as it is understood in the New Testament and create a culture of learning in the local church body. And as one application today, we're going to examine what the church needs to do to critically evaluate from a leadership and a congregant perspective its current mode of public communication instruction, which I would label as the sermon, and assess its effectiveness at reaching the church's end. What does it mean to be a disciple or a learner personally, and your personal contributions? Well, for starters, the responsibility of church members to the leaders. While elders have weighty responsibilities towards the church family, the scripture makes clear that the church family in turn has the obligation to respond willingly and joyfully to leaders God has set in place. Hebrews exhorts the church to, quote, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. On more than one occasion, I've had a church leader quote this to me personally. I don't know why. Apart from the church's general obligation to respond willingly to the elders' leadership, there is a particular responsibility to provide materially for those who labor in the ministry of the word. Paul's instruction to give double honor means rewarding good service well, recognizing that the work, if done diligently, is true labor and worthy of honorable treatment, and not meager reward. In fact, I think it is clear in the New Testament and the early church practice that sound teaching was worth a great deal. And I often wonder what the economic equivalent would be in our modern context. It'd be interesting to examine that further. Finally, the church has an obligation to pray for its leaders. The writer of Hebrews asked for prayer for himself as a leader. Paul frequently expresses his commitment to pray for believers and asks as well for those churches to pray for him. What does it mean to take teaching seriously with regard to what it means to be a serious learner? I'd like to offer some elements here of what it means to be a good looker. I'd like to look at offer a quick framework of elements essential to producing not only a good learner as a unique disciple, but also producing a good culture of learning for the whole congregation. Now, most of this is aimed at the learner engaged in the public activity of church service. Remember, I talked before, this is going to be really around the sermon. And that's where the center of this message is. There's all kinds of different areas we could get into, but this is the one I'm picking. I mean, when applicable, these elements in this framework could be used in groups, home studies, and individual studies also. So, introspection, self-examination, analyzing yourself, looking at your own personality and actions, and considering your own motivations. For instance, what I need to ask myself personally, because this is probably the biggest struggle for me to get right in order to be a good learner, are questions like, what are my hang-ups as I sit in the congregation? What should I work on to be better prepared to really listen? What is the chip on my shoulder that prevents me from being a good disciple, a good listener, good learner? Am I focused on what is actually being presented? Am I being in the moment? Of course, you know, most of you, if you know me, I've flunked all of these questions. So I'm constantly renewing an effort to do that. Contemplation, the action or looking thoughtfully at something for a long time. Do I take time to chew on the material Have I developed a skill for analyzing material that is handed to me? What I, you know, and am I willing to follow through and do the discipline of contemplation and getting the right tools, which leads then into investigation, the action of, you know, the formal or systematic examination or research of a particular topic. Do I follow up on the material presented to me and tie it to existing knowledge that I know? Does it fit with what I know? As a part of my listening, do I review the sources that would substantiate what I have learned, or particularly do I investigate sources that might draw up differences or critiques? And do I view critical analysis of material and follow-up questions to the presenter as a healthy exercise? We're going to talk a little bit about that later. And then finally, in this little framework application, so the act of putting all this together in operation. Can I look back and make a case for my ability to understand and vet material presented in order to be effectively used in my daily walk? And does the material I learned really impact my life and others? And do I make an effort to apply it? And in some way, can I measure my effort? So what does it mean to be part of the community of a disciple? And here again, we're going to talk about one aspect of this community activity, and it's the sermon. And what is the sermon? Well, last week, 2 weeks ago, I briefly alluded to the sermon as a main form of what Evangelical Church views as the church's public teaching activity. So I'm just trying to make that clear now. Or at least it's a primary form in the Evangelical Church. Because of the prominent role of the public service, the sermon is the focus for preaching and teaching in the Evangelical churches. I contend, as a brief survey of the history of the sermons that we talked about will demonstrate, and then also some elements of it, much of what's entailed in the current practice of sermons is, admittedly, not the best way to go about teaching or mirroring the practice outlined in the New Testament of the early church. I want to spend a bit of time today talking about the modern practice of sermoning and look at it objectively. I want us to understand that the way we view sermons is a product of our own contemporary context and recent past. Is the modern sermon the best way to implement the practice of equipping the believer in faith and bringing them to full maturity? Is it the best public approach to such an end? Is the congregant's tolerance of the modern evangelical sermon contributing to a deficient culture of learning? My hope is that we're going to explore that together here. As I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the Evangelical Church and its current practice is heavily influenced by the past 200 years of what I deemed as the, quote, stadium approach to public worship gatherings. That is, as a result of the Second Great Awakening and the influence of revivalism, evangelicals have accepted that church service is really a performance, not a tactical, strategic, organizational meeting. And what do I mean by that? Well, church service, particularly the sermon, I would argue, has been affected by the tools and techniques most closely linked to what we would consider to be a public performance. Let's take a look at some of these elements. One of the many hurdles that the modern sermon faces is the fragmented nature of the content given in sermons. Although the sermon series has become popular, the historical practice predominantly has been that there will be some sort of new topic every Sunday. And this is similar to public performances. Given this fragmentation, members in the evangelical church would have a difficult time articulating what categories or bodies of knowledge have been covered or mastered as a result of sitting under sermons for a given period of time. Of course, this approach to a pastor tackling a new topic could altruistically result from the freedom within the practice to be able to address timely issues. But over time, that practice explicitly reveals a lack of continuity. Continuity in instruction is a baseline standard requisite with regard to understanding a particular body of knowledge. For instance, one doesn't get to molecular biology by first passing an intro to biology class where that intro class has random unrelated topics that are discussed each class meeting. No, there's a set of content that has to be systematically presented and digested in order to build a strong foundation in biology. And this foundation then can support the next level of content, its digestion, contemplation, and application. You know, I'll give you an example from my own experience. I just recently had lunch with a friend of mine who, by standard evangelical criteria, would be a serious believer. He was studying to be a church leader in his local body, and they had a program there for him to study. And he was plagued by not knowing if God wanted him to be in the ministry because he ran into some conflicts with the church leadership there. I spoke with him about decision-making and the will of God, and it was like a revolution to him. I referenced our posted material and said to him that the teaching was really cool because it plugged in what we already knew about our Heavenly Father. He wants good things for us, desires for us not to live in darkness and uncertainty, much like our Heavenly Fathers do. But my friend didn't know this because in his evangelical experience, it was very fragmented. Much of this a result, I believe, of his training and what little exposure he's had to it, and was predominantly his church experience. When we talk about the kind of content in a church service, I'm going to talk about a couple of things here that might get us into a little bit of dicey area. So I'm just going to come out and say them straightforwardly, and then I'm asking you to stick with me here as I soften it up with by more, you know, discreetly identifying the position. So I want to lead with this comment. The evangelical church ought to be navigated and corrected more than reminded and encouraged. The evangelical church ought to be navigated and corrected more than reminded and encouraged. The job of instruction is to build upon acquired knowledge, thereby increasing understanding and increasing wisdom. So we need to be asking, how much have I been asked to learn from this sermon versus, in my opinion, what have I been reminded of? We have in the evangelical church become complacent and have allowed ourselves to prioritize immediate moral conviction over the extended practices necessary for the acquisition of wisdom. So let me explain what I mean by that. I believe that because the evangelical church is lazy, the evangelical church has easily become satisfied with passively listening to sermons that remind us of things that we already know. And we also gravitate and find comfort in sermons that make us feel guilty quick, so that we get that convicted feel, so that something really happened during the church experience. Many evangelicals need to, quote, feel moved more than they need to increase in wisdom. Much of this is a product of the sorts of activities that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. Most evangelical churches go over familiar material and talk about current practical issues during sermons. Many presenters make no effort to point out that the material should be common knowledge or learned in Christianity 101. I mean, let's face it. It is easier for many to call something a good sermon because it aligns with what they already know. Knowing what is said is much easier on the ego. Something like, "Pastor, that was a really good sermon because I agreed with everything that you had to say." Translation, I knew everything and already agreed on it, so it was really good. "Pastor, I can affirm you," or "Church leader, I can affirm you in that message." Or, "Yes, that was really convicted me because I don't do that thing enough. I don't read the Bible enough. I don't love other people enough. I don't forgive other people enough. That really convicted me." These things may be all true and important, but in some ways, digesting it requires less effort than, for instance, being presented with how spiritual gifts ought to be actualized or practiced in the modern church, or what kinds of competing theological views affect the way we understand the work of the Holy Spirit. Now, I am not saying that we shouldn't be reminded about core principles and practices, but I am asking what proportion of the public discourse in evangelical public settings should it consume? How often is too often to be reminded about theological positions that should be familiar to us? Should entire sermons be given frequently that spend the majority of their time doing this sort of thing? And as good learners, should evangelical congregants be satisfied with this much emphasis? Of course, there will be people that are moved properly with almost any sort of presentation. When I offer this critique, I hear responses like, well, I talked to Betty and she was really convicted about that sermon. So Guy, you are probably overstepping it here because it didn't speak to you. Doesn't mean that it isn't valid. Well, I'm arguing here for a principle, not the absolute efficacy of a particular message. And what about our willingness to affirm stuff we already know? Where are the evangelicals that are asking themselves after a sermon, what did this content build on? What is my next step or thought process based on what I have taken in? Is anyone using a grid like the one I just presented and ranking the quality of the teaching based on some criteria? Is what they just heard worthy of introspection, worthy of contemplation, worthy of investigation, and then, you know, worthy of application? Or is it just being content with how it, quote, convicted them or reinforced what they already know? Such a safe place to stay, but one that I fear doesn't move the maturity needle nearly as much as it ought. When we view these questions from the perspective of actively engaging in the practice of learning, we will be able to more easily critique these practices. For example, if I were responsible for the safety of hundreds of people at a factory and needed to be trained on sophisticated machinery in order to prevent harmful events leading to injuries, I wouldn't be satisfied listening to a trainer tell me over and over again to be concerned about safety or to know where the power switch is constantly. At some point, I would like to know how to disengage the pressure valve or to reconnect the AB timer mechanism. Of course, I'm making these things up, but you understand what I'm trying to say. But the evangelical church congregant rarely sees a church sermon like this. They expect to be morally convicted about a particular practice or to affirm something they know, so that they feel like they have a tiny step to do for the next week, or they get a sense of confirming what they already know by being told what they already know. But don't you see that this expectation may actually cloud the analysis of what is actually happening during a sermon and what our expectations for that content may be? It is conceivable that if we were to look at our time of public teaching as a time of public instruction primarily, we may be asking slightly different questions. I am not saying that we ought not to be convicted and admonished. Obviously, that is the job of the evangelical leader to see the trends and the signs of the times to make us take count of our lives and practice. And I'm not indicting any particular person here with regard to leadership at our local body or, you know, generally. I'm really, if I'm making an indictment, it happens to be more about the congregant, more about us as learners. I am saying that we have to have the right balance and set a standard higher for ourselves. For example, if a soldier in the army on the battlefield needs to be reminded over and over again to keep his boots tied, something has gone very wrong with his training. Either the soldier or the commander missed the opportunity to get the soldier in decent enough shape so that that soldier could be a better use to his team by concentrating on more sophisticated tactics. So given the emphasis on church leadership's unique role of teaching in the New Testament and teaching as a major activity in the public gatherings, I am suggesting that the proportion of admonishment and reminder in the evangelical churches be reduced. Or at the very least, a congregant should experience more instruction and less reminding. So that's a brief overview. Now, how do we take it to the next level? How do we increase the richness of the learning experience publicly? I think this, again, by way of review, revolves much more around the congregant and really taking into the next level this grid framework that I suggested earlier. So what's the first thing we can do? Well, you can support your teachers, and not just your money, but your time. Creative ways to free up time of teachers so that they can present material to you in a richer way. And that means, you know, time is money, time is research. For, you know, I might go to Dave Stevens and say, Dave, I see you're teaching in April for 2 or 3 weeks. What can I do in March or February to free up your time and your mind so that you can concentrate and spend more time on that? Now, what that does is, if I go to Dave and I offer my time, then he finds a way to use that time. Stress level in Dave is down. The opportunity for him to create more serious content and to digest it himself is up. The presentation and the content then is going to increase in quality, and everyone in the congregation is going to benefit as a result of that. So if you or I go to someone who we know is going to be in a leadership position and we offer our time in that way, it really can help elevate the experience for everyone. There are different kinds of ways that you could do that. So for instance, there are lots of really smart people in the congregation who have excellent research skills. And, you know, the bivocational nature of what we're doing, from a lot of us who are sermoning, we could use help in that capacity. I wouldn't turn down several people in this congregation coming to me and offering some research on a particular subject that might be related to what I'm doing with teaching. So those are two. The other one, you know, for instance, I used to mow the yard for a church leader who was bivocational. You know, that 3 hours on a Saturday is a big dang deal. And so there, one of those ways that you can help is to figure out what you might be able to do as a way of service to open up that time. And it could be, you know, the sky's the limit. Who knows what that might be? I don't think most of the people that teach in our congregation have probably been asked by very many people about this. You know, what could they possibly do? Who knows? It might be really interesting to see all the kinds of ideas that pop up. And so when you sacrifice your time like that and you show in service and humility to leadership and to the people who are teaching under the leadership, that you take what they're doing seriously, it ups the game for the teacher, say, right? It's like upward pressure. If I spend time helping Dave do something, Dave is, because he is concerned and he properly responds to that sort of sacrifice, is going to want to produce something worthy of those of individuals helping him. It's just ups the bar. Serious consideration of what is presented and the evaluation is not a bad thing, right? Asking if the material and its presentation are of high quality, if you do it in humility and objectively and dispassionately, is your responsibility. You need to expect more of yourself in this regard and more of the presentation. What is the objective of the public teaching? What is it that I'm hearing in the meeting? Is it is it worthy of that, right? Have I given it proper evaluation with the appropriate criteria? We all need to up our game with regard to checking the validity and accuracy of what is presented. After contemplation, you need to do the work to support your position. If you find the issue, you find an issue with the material, or you think it's fantastic, either way, the time to investigate to validate is necessary. And when you do this and you substantiate your conclusion or hypothesis, what's really important about this is if you don't ask and you don't push, you won't spur on teachers and others to be better. Your questions before, during, or after presentations and teaching helps other people. When you are in a classroom, and if you can think back to when you were in a classroom and you thought you had a dumb question, but somebody else was willing to ask it, and as a result, the conversation blossomed and the teacher had an ability to address something that they didn't, they just looked over or passed over, that was really crucial and helped connect the dots for you. Odds are that act of asking the questions and digging down deeper, which is a good individual practice, actually has the benefit of helping others grow. This is pretty standard stuff. And the presenter should welcome the question. I mean, one of the issues with changing the way we look at sermons and the way we look at the approach is often, like I'll speak for myself, I put together a presentation. I barely get the presentation put together. I'm not confident about fielding questions. But that's a humility issue on my part, right? If Steve Long has a question, I should welcome the question and not be afraid if I don't have the answer, because somebody else may have the answer in the congregation and we may have a really rich experience back and forth, because that's a learning process. The performance process is not to ask me any questions and let me be done. So really taking that time to investigate is vitally important. You and I are responsible for elevating the level of learning by pushing for answers and asking questions. Then finally, the application is just the act of pushing harder on yourself. And if you do the rest of these, you know, the introspection, contemplation, investigation, if these get up into creating more of a learning environment during our public setting, then all of that learning that happens as a result of that will then flower in good, strong application. So in conclusion, what I'm suggesting here is upping the game for instruction is important in our public activity as a church. And the evangelical church would do well to treat their time together as a form of edification that models more closely those practices where serious learning takes place. I would ask you to examine what it is that you're participating in, find ways in which you can raise the bar for yourself as a learner, participate in the community so that it then grows, takes the idea of learning as a collective more seriously, and we might radically change the way we practice and view our public instructional time. And with God's grace, I hope that we can. Thanks.